Welcome back to Matchroom Radio with David Diamante. That is me. I am your host. We've got a great episode today. We're here with Lethal Lee Wood, man. Lee, great to see you, brother. How you doing?
I'm feeling, I'm trying to not get too excited, you know. Got to be focused. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, I got to the age of 30. I had a lot of bad luck in boxing. Without moaning about it, nothing went my way. Poor management, two really bad injuries, got to the age of 30 and not won a prestigious title, not won a domestic title. A lot of kids will hung it up, but they've gone and got a job thinking, oh, I need to make some money, need to this, need to that, I'm not going to do anything now. But I just kept at it, you know, call it stubborn if you want, or just determined, but I stuck at it. And now look at me, I'm a day before my 33rd birthday, I've been British champion, Commonwealth champion, WBO European champion, now I'm fighting for a world title. And last minute, change of fortunes, headlining the first to zone show. So you call it what you will, fate or whatever, but I persevered at it. I've stuck at it, determined, dedicated mainly, and here I am.
It's amazing because just like what you said, I mean, there were people talking about, you know, if you had lost, like, you know, let's say the Reese Mould fight or this, hey, maybe you should hang it up and this and that. And then here you are right on the precipice of something very huge. You've got a really tough opponent. You know, Can Zhu is the WBA champ from China. What do you know about your opponent?
He's a very good fighter. He's a volume puncher. And if you let him get momentum and let him land them shots, he will just keep landing them shots all night long. And you'll be in for a very hard night. So you need to take away what he's good at. And my game plan with Ben, which Ben's come up with, and Lee Wiley, 100% confidence in that plan and executing it as well. And that's what I need to do. I'm going to go out there and do it, and I'm going to shock a lot of people.
I love that you've got the belief in yourself, and I think it's a tough fight. I think that you're probably the underdog in this fight, but I think that, you know, it's not about that. It's about what happens, you know, any given Sunday. That's why we watch, and we've seen a lot of upsets, and I think, you know, you absolutely have a great shot. But I think it's important to have a game plan and to have another game plan. You know, because like you said, Can Zhu is a volume puncher. He has some losses on his ledger, but don't forget, he had. You know how many amateur fights he had? Zero. He had zero. So this guy is learning on the job. So he's got a very big boxing IQ, training with Pedro Diaz. Incredible man, incredible trainer. Just really, to me, wonderful boxing mind of our day and age. So it's a tough team. It's a tough team, and you've got a tough task, but at the same time, very little knockouts. You know, well, he's got three knockouts. And you do carry a lot of power. So it's just going to be very interesting to see these styles clash. I can't wait to see it. Can we go back just a little bit? When you, obviously you're from Nottingham.
Yep.
We've done shows there. I quite fancy that town. It's really a cool place. When you think of Nottingham, like, what do you think? What are you proud of your hometown?
Oh, I'm passionate, so passionate about Nottingham.
What I mean, there are things that I learned, you know, being there and working there, doing a show there, that I just thought were super cool. Like, there are all these bars with these like underground tunnels. And
the Nottingham City Centre. From Nottingham Castle till the other side of the Nottingham City Centre, there's caves underneath all of Nottingham, which cover all of Nottingham. So you can get any bar as a cellar, and you'll see a caged up, locked off bit what leads to a cave, which probably leads to every bar on that road. And not many people know that, the caves of Nottingham. A lot of them are sealed off for health and safety, but you can go down on tours and stuff. But here am I, just repping, am I promoting the Nottingham? But honestly, there's so many things, from Sherwood Forest to the Forest Ground itself. It's the River Trent. There's so many beautiful parts of the city, and obviously the Robin Hood Tale itself. But yeah, Torvlin Dean. I can go on and on and on. Carl Froch,
the Mushy Pea Stall.
Yeah, and Goose Fair. Have you heard of Goose Fair?
No, what's that? So
every October, all the little fairs around the country come together to Nottingham to make one big fair. It has like 450,000 people visit every 3 days. It's massive.
Really?
It's huge. Yeah, it's the biggest fair in the country. So yeah.
I got to come check it out.
October for 1 weekend only.
It's a great town. I mean, and you know, we did a show there. It's a really interesting show. You fought Ruthless Ryan Doyle. You stopped him on that card. And you kind of, I guess you were the co-main, but it was kind of a, it really was the co-main because that was kind of a double headline fight with your very good friend, Jordan Gill.
Bunk bed brother, yeah.
That's it, your bunk bed brother. Yeah, you guys, lived together for a long time, huh?
Yeah, yeah. We're literally like brothers. We shared double bed, bunk beds. I don't know if you've seen Step Brothers. It was a bit like that.
Yeah. I hope you didn't have a drum set.
don't touch my drum set. No, very close to him. I spoke to him not half an hour ago. Good times. Obviously now I'm down Essex with Ben, and he's with Caldwell in Rotherham. But good times, and we're still there. Very, very close as well.
Can we go back to that night just for a second? Because, first of all, your fight was spectacular. But Jordan's was not. It was spectacular, but not for him. It was spectacular for Tinoco. How was that? What was the next day like, you and Jordan? Did you give him a pep talk? Like, what was that like?
Yeah, it was straight after, because obviously I was going from a high to a low, so it was kind of bittersweet. It was supposed to be like a really good night for myself, and then obviously Jordan got beat, so it was kind of, I didn't really want to celebrate.
Yeah, so you don't want to gloat in your friend's face.
No, so I went straight to the changing room, pretty much straight after, and it didn't look right anyway. It didn't look right. It didn't look himself, and went to talk to him after, and he just said, "Look, I want Ryan. I shouldn't have fought," which is bad because people don't take into consideration that. They just think, well, we shouldn't have fought, then that's it. You know what I mean? But yeah, he's come back strong. He bounced back from that, and he's got some good wins, and he's on his route to a European title before the end of the year, hopefully.
Well, he really did. I think that loss was one of the best things that ever happened to him because he learned a whole lot from it. You know, you too, also, you've got a couple losses on your ledger. You know, Gavin McDonald, that was, I don't know, it was your 12th fight or something like that?
Yep.
And what's crazy about that fight, like, you got stopped by McDonald, and he's got like very
little punch power. Yeah,
yeah. What happened? Was it just the weight?
I shouldn't have been at the weight. I think after round one, I sat down and I said, Dom, I feel fucked. He said, you'll be all right. So he said, just get on the jab. Second round come out, and tried to drop my pace. I just felt like my breathing was going through the roof. I got to the sixth round, David, and honestly, I couldn't hold my hands up. And he was, I get to the point where I was trying to jab, and he knew nothing was here, and he caught me, and I thought, I'm not going down. I know you can't punch, you can't hurt me, so I'm just going to ride this out. And the shots were coming, and I was like, come on, you can't hurt me. But eventually the ref waved it off because I won't throw him back. But it was kind of, it was a painful fight to lose, not on boxing ability, but on all the other things that surround it. But I learned a valuable lesson, you know, about making weight, pace of a fight as well, even though that pace I can sustain it the way I am now, but that other way I couldn't. But you still learn that as part of it as well, and how to do the weight and how much of effect. Just because you can make the weight doesn't mean you should fight the weight.
Yeah, sure. Speaking of weight, like, tomorrow's the weigh-in. What are you going to refuel with afterwards?
My super fuel is porridge, oats.
Okay.
Porridge, oats. I love porridge. So much.
It's not a Nando's.
No. I have in the past had one, but I don't have my warm meal till right in the evening, which is like 6 or 7 p.m. So I'll fully rehydrate first, and then my fuel comes probably about 4 o'clock, and that'll be oats.
Are you a foodie? Like, is it hard for you to stick to the diet?
I think...
Or are you just kind of used to it now?
I get into just a routine. I just switch to like this mode where it's like, bang, right, I can't have that. That's it.
It's just what it is.
That is what it is, yeah.
I love that. It's funny. Your mind and my mind work very similar, you know, like, there's certain things, if I want to put it down, it's off my menu.
Yeah, that's it.
It's just like, I can't.
In
so.
Fact, it's actually hard after a fight because I go home and it's like, right, you can eat what you want. And I'm just almost like.
You're still in that mode.
I'm like, what do I have? What do I do? I'll have to get, it's easier to flick to what I can't have and right, I know I'm on it now. Bang, bang, bang.
Sure.
I'll wait this, wait that, have that. I know I can't have any of that. And then when I can have what I want, it's like, I'm not even used to this. I don't even know what to have.
You're kind of so used to the regiment.
Yeah. It's like,
well, it's got to be. I mean, look, like you said, you're training out here in Essex now. So, hey, this is, you're a local boy now.
20 minutes away.
You know, you're a local boy. Not in the East Midlands anymore, right? But you're training with a great group of guys. And that's got to help. That's got to help you, like, to be around other guys that understand, that are doing, like Lee McGregor, for example. He's fighting. He's here. He's here supporting you. Lightning Lee, great guy. And he's fighting next week in Belfast, right? So you've got your crew here. And so you guys kind of commiserate. You guys go through things together. I guess it was like that with Jordan before, but
yeah, it's always good to obviously I lived with Jordan, but I trained with him at the Ingles. But then when he went to Dave's, obviously I was trained by Ian Grant, so I was trained at different places. But it is good to live with people. I always say to everyone, if you're a fighter, you need to be training away from home because the home comforts, your friends, your family, they're eating what they want, they're staying up to what time they want, they're going near there and everywhere. Yeah. You can't live like that. You need to be away from them comforts. Especially with other fighters in and out of their pockets doing what they're doing. They're doing the same thing. They're dieting. They're going to bed early. They're resting. So it makes your life easier being in the routine with someone else.
Yeah.
And being around like Josh Taylor, unified world champion. Well, he's won every, he's completed boxing. So there's not many in the country that's done that in Britain. So to have that on like right in front of me, seeing what he's doing, it's unbelievable. And obviously Lee McGregor as well. Shabazz Massoud, we've got two GB lads, Leo Delange, we've got some really good fighters in the gym. And like you say, it's called healthy competition. They run this time and that, they run that distance in that time. They can do this, they can do that. They can lift this, they can lift that. It's just boom, 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 boom. The bar gets raised all the time. Before you know it, you're miles away from the pack because you're your own little team pushing each other.
Top lads.
That's it.
How much is Ben Davison the pivotal factor of all that?
To be honest, I stumbled across Ben almost by accident through a friend that moved to Ben, Leo Delange. And it's the best move that I could have made. I'm just so grateful for where I am, the team I've got, Ben and Lee Wiley. I honestly don't think I'd be here without him, and it's kind of like fate just joined us together. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable the way he views boxing, perceives it, his game plans and the things he has me doing, drilling and drilling and drilling to get it right on the night. He's just so obsessed with his job, even. Yeah, he's obsessed with his job. He's obsessed with boxing and whatever it takes for you to win. He'll be up all night studying. He'll be sending you videos. Lee will be sending me videos, not just of my opponent, but of me, what I need to stop doing, what I need to do more of. This is good. This is bad. Stop doing this. Do more of this. And, yeah, this is going to play probably the biggest part of my fight, getting the victory of the line.
But I tell you, though, as a fight fan, because don't forget, I'm a fight fan first. That's one of the really great things about this matchup is seeing Pedro Diaz versus Ben Davison. Because I'm going to tell you, Pedro is the same way. This man lives and breathes boxing. That's all he does. He doesn't watch movies. He doesn't read books. It's boxing, and he's been like that for a long time. And he's got the incredible pedigree coming from Cuba and all the stuff, the accolades that he's done. He's done so much in the sport. So the two great boxing minds, obviously Ben is much, much younger, and he's much newer to the sport, but he's maybe as dedicated, and it's just great. And, you know, he's a student of the game. He's patient, and he cares so much about his fighters, and I love that, and I can't wait to see this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I think he gets a lot of stick because he's young and good-looking. I think a lot of it is jealousy. Like, a lot of the older coaches, they look at him and think, because he's not been around the club shows and done the routine of spending all the years in the corners, that doesn't necessarily make you a good coach. It's application and learning, ability to learn and not just because you've been there doesn't mean it's like going to the gym for 10 years. You can go to the gym for 10 years and hit a bag and teach yourself. Does it make you as good as someone that's done 2 years with a coach and been applied yourself? No, you can spend 50 years in a gym, and if you're not doing the right things, you're never going to get better.
100%.
So it's the same with coaching. And Ben's just the way, I think it's naturally the way he sees things and the way he works things out. It's, I can't even put into words how he breaks it down, but I listen to what he says and I'm like, so simple, but people miss it so easily.
Yeah, but you know, you've heard that saying, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And sometimes KISS is the way to do it. You know, even in boxing, sometimes double jab, right hand, like it doesn't, you don't need to come up with, there's a reason why those things are there, because they work really well.
So for this game plan, what we've been doing, I'm not going to say what I've been doing, but we watched the videos of all the fighters my opponents fought. None of them do it. None of them been doing it. It's like, and I see like, well, why have they not, they've not been doing it?
Mm.
So simple works. We've looked at the same thing on other fighters and other similar styles and how they won the fights and they was doing it. And it's like, no one's done it. Everyone's played into his hands and done exactly what benefits him. I'm not going to do that.
Let me ask you this, because I know we're talking about the benefits of being away from home and training with these fellas, but what about the tough stuff? You've got two little ones. What's that like?
Oh, it's hard. It is very hard.
They're 2 and 6?
2 and 6, yeah.
Boy and a girl?
Boy and a girl, yeah.
Man.
And I have them every weekend normally. I go back for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I get every other Friday off. So I have them Friday night, Saturday, and sometimes Sunday. And then every other week, Saturday. Obviously, for this fight, I've been down there. I've had to stay down there. No distractions. Because it's 2 hours there, 2 hours back. And then I spend 2 hours driving home. I see my kids. I see my friends. I see my family. I get back in my car. I drive 2 hours. And I'm bollocks because I've not rested. I've been running around. So I have to stay down there. That's the only way to do it when I'm fighting. So I've had near enough 6 weeks. And it's been hard. It has been hard. FaceTime luckily helps a little bit. But it's not the same as squeezing your kids and hooking your kids. It's not the same.
It's great to have it. But it's not the same.
It's better than nothing, but I can't wait to take my kids away after this fight. And, you know, it's going to be nice walking to talk to my six-year-old daughter. She knows I'm boxing. And she'll know if I lose. She'll be like, did you lose? Then I've happened before in the past against Dickens. Did you win, Dad? I went, no. She went, you win next time.
It was majority decision.
Yeah, but
it wasn't super far off.
She didn't get that. And she don't understand the fight.
Of course.
I've got to go back a winner. It doesn't matter who I'm fighting.
No, for sure. Does she watch the fights?
I hope she might be watching this one, but I told her, mom, you know, let her watch it the next day just to make sure. It could be a very great clash of styles.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's a grueling fight, even if I win, obviously, which I'm planning on doing, I'd rather not watch it.
So. Yeah, I understand that. Speaking of kids, what were you like as a kid?
I was very quiet until I was about 11. I was very mouth shut, eyes and ears open, absorbing everything, very quiet.
And taking it in.
Yeah, then I think I got to like 11 or 12, and I was totally the opposite. I was like, I was just a little shit.
I wasn't a bad kid,
but I was just...
class clown a little bit?
Yeah, a little class clown, and the fun and adrenaline, excitement, doing things I shouldn't have been doing.
I mean, what happened? Your balls dropped? What happened?
No, they didn't. I was just a tiny little kid. And
just one day? Someone gave you some sugar?
That's basically what happened. It was just fun. I found out I think it was adrenaline. I must have found adrenaline. I just loved it. Whether it was climbing trees as high as they could get.
Oh, I love that.
Or like motocross bikes. Or the kids I used to hang around with, it was like, if they said to me, you can't do this, that's it, bang, I'll do it. I bet you can't flip off that top of that rock. I'm already jumped by the time they said it. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's so funny because growing up as a boy, I don't think other people understand, like, when someone dares you, like, it's, you're doing it. It doesn't matter what's happening.
I remember there was a half pipe built on Lamley Field next to me, and it still had the fence up because it didn't have the sides on yet. Just the pipe. They're not even put the level on it.
Yeah.
Just the pipe and a bit of thing. And I said, you can't drop enough on that. I was already putting the skates on. I'm up there. And I dropped in. I went straight down a flop. I landed on my, pretty much in a backflip, man, and my feet came up.
I did it, though.
And I can do it. I can drop in now. It's quite easy. I just got shit back up, boom, again, and I can do it.
So this is rollerblading you're talking about?
Rollerblading, yeah.
I've never rollerbladed in my life, but I used to skateboard, and I'll tell you this. There's only one way to learn how to drop in, and that's eating crap. You're gonna fall.
But because that's the
when,
same
when you everything. Drop in, you have to slam your front foot down, and there's no way to understand the mechanics of it until you just eat it.
You have to commit. If you slightly bottle it, you're gonna go over.
That's it. You're gonna go over. So either way, you're gonna eat it.
I use the same analogy with boxing and everything. I say to kids, like, you're gonna get beat, and the amateurs, you're gonna get beat. You're gonna learn more when you get beat. When you learn to walk. Right, when you're a toddler, you can't remember, or your mum can't remember, or your dad can't remember. If I ask you, how many times did you fall over before you could walk? No one. No one knows. You look at you and you can walk. No one says, yeah, but you fell about 50,000 times. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. You can walk. Yeah,
that's right. You keep
doing
it.
Same with boxing. Like, if you get beat, so what? When you become English champion, British champion, no one's going to be bothered because you're champion. They don't look at, you got beat 5 times. First, it doesn't matter now because you're a champion.
That's right.
It's irrelevant. Someone don't come up to you and go, come here, come and meet this British champion. By the way, you lost 5 times before you won that. They don't say that. You're British champion, yeah? And eventually you get there, regardless of what happens first. That's it.
Speaking of kids and learning to box and all that stuff, you were with some friends and you went to the gym, and then like your mom started to take you, things like that. You were young. I mean,
well, yeah, my mom didn't drive at the time, so I went with my brother and his friends, and it was my friend's mom that took us, and they went from fad to fad, and I walked up the street to knock on to see if William was going boxing, and she just said, oh, he's not going anymore. And I was like, all right. So I turned around and she said, oh, would you like a lift to the gym? And I was like, if you don't mind, yeah. And then she took me for about 6 weeks or so, or maybe longer than that. And then one of the coaches, Mark Anderson, which is my friend's dad upstairs, uh-huh. He started coaching there. He lived across the road from me at the time.
This is the Phoenix?
The Phoenix, yeah. And he started taking me, and I never stopped going after that.
You know, it's amazing, too, because at this time, like, you, first of all, you were like, grasshopper. You were tiny.
Very tiny.
I mean, you could barely look over the apron, right?
And they called me Little Lee at school. I was that small. So.
Now you're lethal. But before, yeah. It was little. But, like, at this time, one of the greatest fighters coming out of the UK was in this gym. And not only that, from your same village.
Yep, same.
You went to the same school.
It's frightening me.
And you're at the same club.
Yep.
And
same middle name. I've read his book and it's scary because, like, we've got the same middle name. One of our middle names, Martin. His date of birth's like the 2nd of the 777. Mine's like the 1st of the 888. There's little similarities, like quite similar, but a bit different. I remember reading his book and...
we're talking about Carl the Cobra Frotch.
Yeah, we are, yeah. And I read his book once and I remember one thing that was frightening is his mum sent him to Carney Willis and he's in the area. No, his mum sent him to Gedling, sorry. And he was in the area for Carney Willis. And
if Which is where you're from. You're from Gedling, yeah.
There's two schools. Everyone knows Carney Willis is an amazing school. Gedling Comp is like a bit of a dive. It's been knocked down now. It's that bad. So his mum sent him to Gedling because she went Gedling and his brothers went Gedling. But he was in the area for Willis, which is all his friends from his primary school went to Willis. And he says in his book, he remembers crying because he wanted to go there and his mum sent him there. And the same thing happened to me. All my friends were going to Willis and mum was like, no, you're going Gedling. I went Gedling. And I remember I was on my bed crying. This is obviously like 1999, 2000, whatever it was. And I read his book, like, obviously after I left school and that. And it was exactly the same. It's frightening.
I don't know if you know this about him, but he once boxed in front of 80,000 people.
I never heard that. You know.
Yeah. A lot of people have never heard that. Yeah.
One place has never boxed, though. One place has never boxed is the City Ground.
NFFC, Nottingham Forest Football Club. You've got some dreams. I know you do, and you've ticked some of them. You're about to tick another one on Saturday. You had a dream to win a British title. Check. Which is amazing. That Lonsdale belt is some beautiful, beautiful hardware. It's
beautiful, yeah, beautiful.
And I know you'd like to retain that, to give it down to your children, to your grandchildren. That's a dream of yours. Also, you wanted to at least challenge for a world title, which will happen on Saturday. And well, God willing, with this COVID time, can't say anything till the bell rings. Actually, till the fifth bell rings, till the fourth is completed. I never think of fights in the books. But hopefully that will happen on Saturday. If all goes as planned. And, you know, I want to say this before we... The last thing is you want to fight at the City Ground.
The first person to do so, the first person to headline at the City Ground, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, you've talked about how that night in Nottingham, when I announced and when Jordan Gill shared the card, it was a great night. And you said, like, you went in there knowing you were going to win the fight. Like, you just knew it in your bones. Was that something like literally you just felt it, or is it something you mustered yourself?
I think it's mindset.
Can you do that this time, do you
Absolutely.
Think?
Absolutely. It's been done. I think when your mind's set and you're prepared right, it all comes down to your mindset. If you've put all the training in and you've got your game plan right, it's down to your mind.
You got skill and you got will.
You got will. The will.
You
to
guys
win.
Both have skill.
The will to win is probably one of the best attributes you can have. As long as all your other boxes are ticked, so you're fit, you're strong, you've done your weight right, you've got your experience, what's it come down to? Your game plan. My game plan's bang on. Then what's left?
I'll tell you this. To win. I'm going to be really honest. I think you punch very strong, but I'd like to see more combinations instead of single shots. I mean, when I see combinations from you is when the guy's hurt. Then you let your hands go. You're a great finisher. But I'd like to see those combinations in the middle of a fight.
You may see that.
Because sometimes the single shot, it's going to be hard. A guy like Kan Zhu, he's got a very high boxing IQ. Very high boxing IQ. And it's a volume puncher. But again, he doesn't have that power that you carry. And, you know, speaking of featherweights, there's another great fight coming up. It's the rematch with Warrington and Lara. I'm curious as to what you think about that. But that was, it was a very similar type of fight, right? Like Lara was, came in. First of all, no one knew who he was. No one gave him a shot.
And Josh did all the wrong things as well. All the wrong things.
But even still, like, Lara was just willing to eat the shots to land his, and he did.
And didn't let him off the hook.
What do you think of the rematch? How does it play out?
Surely, Josh is adaptable. Being seeing what he's done in boxing, he has to be adaptable.
Do you still think he's the number one at 126?
I was always slightly a bit like, how come no one's beat him? But then after a few big wins after the Selby and the Frampton win, I was like, he's better than he looks. He can stick to a game plan, etc. And sometimes them kind of fighters, like a bit like Anthony Crawler, but slightly different. The sparkly, they're not as sparkling as you think looking at them, but they're very strict at sticking to a game plan. They do what they need to do and they get the win. And I thought it was that kind of fighter. And I thought the Lara fight, he was just wrong for him. And possibly if he can't change drastically, it's going to be wrong for him again.
And it's going to be at Headingley in front of 20,000 people. Not 80. Not 80, but 20.
And I mean, like, being a British fighter, I hope he does bounce back because it creates more big fights in Britain. But he needs to drastically change.
There's another... look, dude, 126 is on fire right now. You got Jazza Dickens and Kid Galahad in a rematch. That's coming up in a fight camp fight. What do you think of that fight?
I won't bet on it, but I would slightly steer towards Galahad late stoppage.
Toward Barry.
But I mean, if Galahad can somehow pull out the bag light and do what he needs to do, whether that's hold, spit his gum shield out, you know, I'm not gonna say get dirty, but if he's got to do what it takes, and if he can do what it takes, he might be able to get a pointsman across the line. But you know, it's all about experience and doing what he has to do. But yeah, like you said, there's some massive names. Like I had my eyes on Manuel Navarrete. Like,
huge.
He's a big punch up of long arms, but his feet are terrible and he makes a lot of mistakes. And against someone like me,
man, you sound like Ben Davison. I swear to God, I'm telling you, it's great. Like, I love it.
A fight with me and him would just be for absolute fireworks, and it'd be a great fight for the fans. I mean, look, it's one of them. I think the most avoided fight is probably Gary Russell Jr. Who wants that smoke? I mean, it's just a hard fight.
Yeah, it's
and
a hard fight.
You don't get a lot of reward for the three of us.
Yeah.
I mean, but yeah, there's some massive
fastest hands in the game. Some of the fastest hands in the game. And he's a tough, tough kid. I love him. I love his whole family, man. I'm friends with Gary. He's great. He's a hell of a fighter.
Very good.
Yeah. Tugsto Niambar, he just moved up to Super Feather. And he actually got beat by Chris Colbert. He's a guy from Brooklyn, one of my buddies. But it's a great division. There's some great fights out there. I know you would really fancy I know you fancy a Jazza rematch.
Absolutely, but
I mean,
I can't see it. But
yeah, well, right now you've got bigger fish to fry, which is amazing to say.
I'd love the rematch, and I hope it happens. But I can't see him winning his next fight, and I'm planning on winning mine. So we'll see.
Of course, because I mean, and obviously the golden contract. I mean, you stopped David Oliver Joyce in round 9, right? The Irishman. The Punisher, but then you had the majority decision loss against Jazza, so you'd love to right that ship.
I would, because everything went wrong for that fight. Every single thing.
Like what? What goes wrong on fight night?
My personal life. 2 weeks before the fight.
Life? You live with a bunch of guys. chicken breasts, right?
Obviously, I said earlier, I've got a 2-year-old lad.
Sure.
So back in 2020, I think it was end of 2019, my lad was coming up to... however, 6 to 8 months of age, and I'd not even met him yet. So I was going through a lot of things.
I was going through so many things.
Yeah. And then I went away on training camp to Fort Aventura day one. I got bronchitis. I was there for 2 weeks, spent it on antibiotics, 3 weeks away from the fight. So like loads of things went wrong, but you can't make excuses. No one wants to hear excuses. Even if, regardless of them things, if I'd have been fitter, that not happened in my life, I'd have rocked up and done the same thing, and the same thing would happen because I didn't have a game plan.
Yeah.
I just thought, me being ready, me being good enough to, I was good enough to win that fight, I could just go into it and win. And you can't do that at that level. You need a game plan. You need to know what you're doing. You need to get hard sparring. I didn't get hard sparring. So loads of things around the fight was pretty much set myself to fail. Knowing what I know now, how to approach that fight, and I know how to win that fight as well.
I love what you're saying because you're taking responsibility.
Absolutely.
Because at the end of the day, excuses are just that, right? Exactly, they're excuses. Exactly. And we all have them. Fighters are hurt. Everyone has a private life. Someone's got a parking ticket. Someone's got a death in the family. Terrible things happen.
Footballer Thierry Henry said he's probably 2% of his games, out of all the hundreds of games he played, he was probably 100% for one of them.
And that's it. And
but he still performed.
Correct.
And that's the same with boxing. Everyone has things going off in their life. They have niggles, they have injuries, illnesses, and you just crack on and you get the job done. And that's not an excuse. It's not good enough. So
yeah, that's
you have to
exactly.
be accountable and responsible for your actions and make sure you're prepared the best you can.
And I just feel like boxing is even harder than other sports because there's no shoulder. So like if you're a footballer, yeah, it's big. It's a big stage, but you've got a game next week. You got another game.
And you got 10 players.
And you got 10 players. Boxing, when's your next fight? Do you know what I mean? Like,
no fight, no payday.
Yeah. And you've said this, and it's very true. I've said this many times, but you said it with fights. You know, you're only as good as your last fight.
Exactly.
And I've always said, you're only as good as your last performance.
And I said that going into my last fight. I said, look, you're as good as your last fight. In my last fight, I got beat. So you can say what you want. Now I'm back in this fight. I said, look, I'm as good as my last fight. I won by knockout.
But again, it's the mentality. And I love that. And that's a winning mentality. And it's the right mentality to come into the biggest fight of your life, which takes place on Saturday. I'm gonna let you go because I know you have a lot of things to do.
I do. We're getting to bed, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. But I do want to talk just a little bit about Nicky Booth, another fella from Nottingham. Rest in peace. And unfortunately, we lost Nicky at the young age of 40. There's a picture of you holding that British belt. Can you tell us some things about Nicky?
Yeah, I remember watching Nicky and Jason. I think the box that Harvey had in. I boxed there as a pro as well. I think it was a Sky show. Maloney, I think, had it at the time because Sky used to be shared out between the different promoters at the time. Rendon Monroe might have been on the bill. And look, I was just in total awe of these guys, a British title. I had a first awards evening as an amateur. I think it was 2001. And Nicky brought his British title. And I had an oversized shirt on, might have been my brother's. I had a new fair hat on, probably from Skegness Market, so it probably wasn't even real. I had my photo with him, and I holded the belt, and that's the photo that's been on all my social media before my last fight or after my last fight, and that inspired me to get it. That was probably the most single biggest moment, to hold that, to feel that, and it was like, obviously, the gold, and I was like, I want one of these, and I basically asked him, like, what do you have to do to get this belt, basically? It's like, and everyone's always, he's British champion. You have to be the best in Britain to get that belt.
You asked him that?
I said, how did he get it? My coach was Mark Anderson at the time. And I said, I was holding it. I was a bit shy. And I said to him, like, how did you get that belt? And he said, you have to be the best in Britain to get that belt. And that's, I just remembered that, boom. Okay, I want to be the best in Britain.
And that's stuck in your head.
I wanted that belt ever since. I watched Carl go win it. I've actually even... Before Kirkland Lamb passed away recently, about a year ago, Tony Lang took me to see Kirk, which I'm very privileged for because not many people got to see him. It wasn't very well. But I had the book. I got it for Christmas one year. It's like a few hundred quid. Mum got it me for Christmas. And hardback, very rare it was. And I was wanting to sign it for me because obviously Nottingham hero, looked up to him. I went to see him and he couldn't sign it. But I got a photo with Tony and Kirk together. And Tony signed my book. And, you know, I'm really thankful for that because all the Nottingham fighters that have been before me, I just respect them all. Jared Kalik as well. Mm. There's so many. And I feel like now going on winning that British title and the Commonwealth title, I threw my name into the mix with them all. And Saturday night, I take a step closer to helping inspire the next Lee Wood that's comes through as well.
And you are literally that close to realizing your full dream. Because if you win this fight, if you win this world title, we're going to have a talk with Eddie and see if we can get that fight at the NFFC.
Absolutely. I mean, I've thought about it briefly. But at the same time, I need to just be focused on Saturday night. Because if I'm not, and I've got one eye on something else,
yeah, that's
that can
it.
Just totally dissolve into the abyss and it's gone. So I'm focused on Saturday night. And then after, we'll do some talking. We'll do a lot of talking about it.
How proud is your mom of you?
She gets very nervous, my mom. Very nervous. But yeah, she's proud. If you go on...
You're really close to your mum, yeah?
Yeah, if you go on mum's social media, you want no shadow of her kids, to be honest. Or if you walk in the house, me and my kids, my other grandkids, me.
Right. But I don't think a lot of people know this about you, but you're a really sensitive guy.
I am. I'm very quite emotional guy as well, like especially when it comes to family and friends. I've got a group of close friends and family, like my mom, my aunties. I spent a lot of time at my aunties as well at weekends growing up. I think family, very, very close to family.
But even not just family and friends, but even like opponents, I know that you... How do you
do you know what I've always been the same. I don't know why, what it is since I've been young. I think it's empathy.
That's the right word I was looking for.
Yeah,
you empathize with your opponents, yeah. But how do you destroy?
Because I think
then empathize at the same time.
At the time, it's not like at the same time. It's like at the time, it's like right. It's
either destroy.
It's either me or you. So it's going to be you because I put me before you. Then after that, it's like, do you know what? I hope it's all right.
Yeah.
And especially like with Mold, because that was like on the spin side back in 2014 when I got beat. That if he felt how I felt, that British title at the time was everything in my life.
Sure.
And when I got beat, I didn't get beat because of boxing ability. I got beat because of other things. I went back to my changing room and like my world had ended. Jordan Gill stayed with me that night and Hall and everyone else went home. I'm glad he stayed with me that night because I was in a bad way. Like I was low, like the lowest I've ever been at the time. And I thought if he feels how I felt, I need to talk to him because it's not a nice feeling.
This is one thing I love about the sport. You know, the seconds before the bell rings, literally, it's like war. Like it's war. And the moment the bell rings, it's like two men hugging with so much respect. And I'll tell you this, a lot of my best friends that I knew through school happened through fist fights. We did not like each other. And we mixed it up, and afterwards we had respect for each other, and we became mates. And you see that a lot in boxing, and I think it's a beautiful thing. So I love it. I'm so excited to see your fight on Saturday. I think it's an incredible main event. Look, I'm sad that Ben and Granados has fallen through. That fight hopefully will happen in the future, but I think this is a great, great fight. Kanzu, Lee Wood. WBA Featherweight Championship of the World. Before I let you go, the fans have a couple questions if you'd be kind enough to answer them. Let's run through them real quick. All right, Richard Gronit asked Lee, you've been a pro for 10 years later this year. When you started, did you have a length in mind for your career? This is obviously the biggest fight of your career, but I'm intrigued if fighters plan for an exit strategy. Thanks.
I think when I turned pro, in my head I thought, right, I want to box for as long as possible. As long as I'm not getting beat up, taking shots and being in wars, which I never planned on doing because that's not how I box. I want to box for the longest possible. I still feel the same now. Like it kind of scares me when I think I'm not, when I get to that day where it's like, right, I can't fight anymore. That chapter's closed. It's like, I'm going to miss it.
Yeah.
I'm going to miss it so much because I just love the fighting. I mean, without shouting too loud because I don't promote this to him, but, I didn't even know boxers got paid when I hold Nick's title. I didn't know boxers got paid. When I started boxing amateur, I didn't know boxers got paid. It was irrelevant. I just love fighting. And same now. Like, I love fighting. Like when that day comes, it's going to be hard. But I do want to box as long as my body's letting me and I'm performing in the gym and I'm performing my fitness and my sparring and everything's bang on, I will continue to fight.
You are bit by the bug, my friend. You are bit by the bug. Can I ask you this as a follow-up to that question? I know what your goals are as a fighter. But what about in life afterwards? What do you, Lee Wood, want to be in 20 years, in 15 years? Like, do you want to teach kids? Do you want to be what do you want to be when you grow up?
I just want to be happy, mate. To be
good
honest.
Answer, fair.
No matter what I'm doing, there's loads of things. I can make money doing anything. Like, as I've grown up through boxing, I've always done little bits and bobs. Like, I've got a property and stuff I've renovated and did nearly everything myself apart from the gas. Like, I can quite hands-on with things. So I'll always keep busy. I'll always do things anyway after boxing. I can make money. I don't need to worry about after boxing because boxing's hard. There's not a lot of things in life like boxing.
This is very true.
No matter what you do after boxing, it's going to be easier than boxing. And I'm going to have a lot of time. And it feels like it's sometimes fighters think, oh, after boxing, it's not going to be a lot of time. There's loads of time after boxing. Especially because I believe after boxing, I'll be fit and I'll be, quite youthful because of the lifestyle that I've lived. So yeah, I mean, I am looking forward to that freedom, but at the same time, I just love fighting.
It's not really about the money, though. It's about, like, what do you want to do? Like, I get, like, you want to be happy, but, like, do you like to travel? Do you want to work with children?
Yeah, I mean,
do you want to?
I enjoy, like I said, I do enjoy, like, renovating properties and that.
Okay.
So I probably will just go into that and having that bit of spare time, just giving it back to my kids, like, and other kids as well, like, if they come from like families like mine where the dad's around, it'd be nice to give them a bit of guidance like what I had, because I think that's probably why I liked the boxing gym, because I had that father figure in the gym,
sure,
instead of at home, and it's probably because of that why I found boxing, because I was terrible at football, because all the kids at school was better than me, and I just thought they're better than me at football, so I'm probably better at something else. But their dad used to take him training in the week, they used to take him to games at weekends, so there was always going to be better than me because they did it more than me.
Sure.
And I didn't realize that at like 8, 9 years old. So then I found the gym and I kind of excelled because it was a level playing field. Even though there's older than me, it's still like a fairly level playing field. And I excelled a little bit and I just thought I was better than them at that. But it wasn't. Maybe because of that, I was looking for the father figure and the coach, and maybe that's why I kind of took that route. And it'd be nice to find them kids that have not got that as well and give them a bit of guidance and structure to their life and discipline and all the things it gave me.
You could probably make such a huge difference. I have a funny question, though. If you could do that to yourself, if you could go back to a young Lee Wood, you know, from that age or even a little bit older, like, let's say 16 years old, what would you tell yourself?
I would probably just say, just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because that thing inside you, whatever you've got inside you, is going to take you a long, long way. So just believe in yourself like I always have. No matter who's told me different, I've always believed in myself. I don't know what if it's just what comes natural to me, just, or probably because I never had someone telling me how good I was, so I had to tell myself, maybe, I don't know, but I'll just tell myself, listen, whatever you've got inside you, it's going to take you a long way, so just keep it and just keep going.
Amen, brother. I love that. All right, I wish we could end there, but we have two more questions. I want the fans to get theirs. Peter BOC Group asks Lee, you lost your O back in 2014 versus Gavin McDonough. We talked about this. Am I right by thinking you learned more from that than most other scenarios? Is the O too protected these days?
Absolutely. I think one role model in boxing, Floyd Mayweather, people look at him and want to be like him and keep that unbeaten record, which is fair enough. If you keep your unbeaten record whilst learning on the job and fighting good fighters, fair play. But if you don't and you take a risk, so what? You take a risk and you learn more from a loss. Like I did. I learned more from that one loss over 18 fights. Just that one fight that I did in 18 fights, 18 wins, you know? And that's worth its weight in gold alone.
I hope the boxing fans hear that and take that in from someone that knows. All right, final question. Elliot Palmer asks Lee, you've had Dave Caldwell as your manager for 2 or 3 years now. You must look back and think, what a great decision you made here. He's delivered.
Absolutely.
DC. Like,
so from 2011 till 2019, I'd not really done a lot. And it was getting to the point where I'd hit 30 years old, turned pro at 23. Obviously, one shot the British title, waiting around for another one, got promise after promise after promise at my old gym. Some people messaged me and said, look, mate, you're 30 now, and you've not done this. Like, you need to think about getting a job. And I look back, and I look at the texts, and I'd be like, I can't remember what I replied, but I probably lost my head. I'm like, you just focus on, you just do what you're doing, and I'm doing what I'm doing. And how right was I? Because it's like that picture that's been around on social media. You know, there's a guy with an axe and he's chipping away at the rocks. And one guy gets to there and he gives up. But the diamond...
It's right there. I've seen it.
The other guy's going and going and going and he gets there.
Yeah.
But you literally don't know how far away from success you are. And if I'd have gave up in December when I was in tears, and Jordan was a big part to play in the Cold War move as well. So I remember coming back to the flat in December 2018, and I was crying because the fight fell through with Walsh for the British. It was supposed to be on ITV, and Ingalls stringing me along again. It didn't happen, and I come back crying. I said, look, John, I have to leave him. I can't do it anymore. And he said, look, talk to Dave. That was in December 2018. March 2019, Cornwall champion. That was that within 3 months. Then the October, WBO European. February, Dickens split decision loss. Following February, British champion. Following July, world title shot. Oh, no, sorry. I won the Bonsu fight was in the March, yeah. Then May was the defence in Nottingham in between that as well. So that's what a turnaround. What a turnaround. And like you said, a massive thank you to Dave Caldwell, because he's literally changed my career, changed my life. And I wouldn't be here without him.
Well, you can lead a horse to water, but the horse has got to drink. And my friend, you are thirsty and you've been drinking. And I can't wait to see what happens on Saturday night. Kanzu, Lee Wood, WBA Featherweight Championship of the World. We wish you the very best of luck. Thank you for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me.